Hey, for Shusi Rabbeim, thank you, Rabbi Olshin, for those very kind words. And the truth is, last night I was really blown away by the guys, just to see how many people came out to some optional learning to talk about a very important inyan in a very delicate way. And Baruch Hashem, it says a lot about you guys. You're looking to grow, and that's what yeshiva is all about. So it's a tremendous chus for me to be here with you. And I hope that the Torah that we're going to learn, you'll be able to turn into tefillah. But a little bit I want to talk about the tefillos that we hope to not have to daven, and that is the tefillos that we daven after our tefillos are not answered. Because I think that's a lot of our experience with davening. I think one of the biggest frustrations with davening that we face as human beings, as people who want to daven and become daveners, is that we often feel like, I'm not really sure what's happening with my tefillos, for very understandable reasons. So let's talk about some of the frustration that we have. We try to talk to Hashem, and it seems like HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not always talking back. I guess I'll just say, by way of Hakadama, talking about tefillah is also a funny thing. Learning about tefillah is a funny thing. I often tell people, when people say, you know, Rebbe, how can I get better at davening? I say, daven better. Yeah? Look in the sitter. Just do it. There's no magic tricks. If you want to become a davener, so pay attention to the words you're saying. Carve out enough time in your day that you're not rushing through your tefillos. A lot of it is, you know, we like the segulas, we like the quick fix. There's really no quick fix. It's something that is called avoda, specifically avoda shebalev. It's some heavy work to become good at davening. And it's also a very private thing, which makes it funny to talk about it. Chazal say already, and the Svarim explain further, that really no two tefillos in history have ever been the same. We all say the same Shemona Esrei, but no two tefillos in history are ever the same because we all daven from our perspective. It's a very, very private experience. The Shem Yishmuel, I saw you have a set in the Beis Medrash, the Rebbe of Sakachov, the grandson of the Kutzker, the Shem Yishmuel writes in Parshas Vayigash in the name of the Arizal that Shemona Esrei, which is the height of tefillah, is said in a whisper, because it's really a secret. He compares it, the Arizal says, it's almost like a private conversation that takes place behind closed doors. It's a secret between you and Hashem. We daven out loud, and then we come to Shemona Esrei, and all of a sudden the conversation gets very quiet, because it is a very private thing. Rav Soloveitchik, many, many years ago, taught a class in one of the graduate schools of Yeshiva University on tefillah. And the Rav began with his humility. He said, talking about tefillah, teaching about tefillah is a very strange thing. Because tefillah is very much a private experience. And Rav Soloveitchik said, I can't really tell you how to daven. I can only tell you my personal experience with davening. Some of the things that I connect to when I daven. But at the end of the day, Rav Soloveitchik said, and it's been written in his name, that tefillah is meant to be understood and experienced and enjoyed by an individual. I can't tell you how to daven. You can't tell me how to daven. We could try to be machazik one another, and that's what we're doing here today. But at the end of the day, tefillah is something that's very, very personal. And like much of Avodas Hashem, it's going to be what you make of it. If you decide that this is something that's important to you, that learning how to daven with kavanah and have a real conversation with the Kodesh Baruch Hu is something that matters to you, you'll learn how to do it. You'll figure out how to do it. Again, there's a lot of svarim, and there's a lot of things to guide you, shiurim to guide you, rebbeim to speak to. But at the end of the day, it's about a Jew looking inside of himself, looking at his own lev, avodah shebalev, and saying, I want to talk to Hashem. I want to learn how to communicate with HaKadosh Baruch. Chazal say about tefillah that it's one of the things, the Gemara in Bracha says, that people take and they cheapen it. It's something that people are mezalzel. It's something that's all made berumel shel olam in the language of the Gemara. It stands at the height of the universe, but people don't take it seriously. And you see it sometimes even by big people, chashuv people. People who know Shas from beginning to end, you watch the way they daven, they're not connecting during davening. It's hard. Davening is very hard. The world stands on Torah, Avoda, and Gemilas Chasadim. Those are the three pillars of the world. Right? Avoda, we don't have Beis HaMikdash, unfortunately, today. We don't bring karbanos. Tefillah is one of the pillars of the world, but it seems at times like it's one of the shakiest pillars. Chesed, people are doing unbelievable things in Chesed. Torah learning, there's revolutions taking place in Torah learning in the world over. Tefillah, how many people are really working on tefillah? You know people are really working on tefillah? What does it mean to even grow in tefillah? People spend their whole life davening Shemona Esrei the same way that they were when they were 13 years old, when they're 70 years old. How do you grow in tefillah? How does a person learn to say brachos with greater kavana? Rav Soloveitchik said, it's such a tragedy. Most people, and it's true, it's such an honest point. Rav Soloveitchik said, most people think of tila as a chore, and they want to be able to just check it off at the end of the day. I catch myself sometimes, you know, like you have like a busy afternoon and you're trying to figure out when am I going to grab mincha or when am I going to catch marav, and I'm rushing, I'm changing my whole schedule around, I'm planning my family, you know, vacation and afternoon at the park to make sure I can get back in time for mincha. The whole day is centered around tefillah b'tzibur, gevaldik, very important. It shows the chashivas of tefillah b'tzibur. But after moving around my whole schedule to make sure, because I want to daven with a minyan, and then I catch myself at that mincha, I'm like, I'm not even so here. I'm not so much present. I changed my whole day around to make sure I wouldn't miss minyan for anything in the world. But then when I'm actually davening, I'm not paying attention. Atachonen, Refa'enu, Yushalayim, Shema Kolenu. Rabbi Elia Lopian once said, he said, sometimes you ask a person after davening, you ask them, did you say Refa'enu today? Right? How many of you said Refa'enu at Shachar this morning? Right? Okay, good. Beautiful. You remember saying it, or you're assuming that you said it? Now, if you were davening for someone, then you probably remember that you said it. Right? You said, what do you mean? My Nebuch, my cousin, my friend, my this, my that. Of course, I know I said it because I was thinking about a specific person, or I'm not feeling well, so I davened with a little extra oomph today. V'lam al shinim. Who said v'lam al shinim today? So you all raise your hand. Of course we did. We think we did. We probably did. Right? But do you remember it? Can you picture it? Can you get back to that moment when you said V'lam al Shinim this morning during Shachris? Most of us probably can't. Rav Elia Lopian said, imagine if a person, let's use Rafa'enu as the model. The great Mashkiach, Rav Elia Lopian said, imagine you ask a person at the end of their day, did you go to the doctor today? Did I go to the doctor today? I don't remember. Did I go to the doctor today? I think I went to the doctor. I checked my schedule. It says I went to the doctor today, so I think I probably went. Which, that's very strange, no? You don't remember? This afternoon, did you go to the doctor or not? Rabbi Elia Lopian says, when we say Refa'enu, it's going to the doctor. It's our checkup with the Kodesh Baruch. It's an appointment with Hashem. So why is it that 2 hours later, it's not so clear that I was actually even there? And the answer is because even when I was there, I wasn't so much there. That's the challenge of tefillah. It's omed berumo shel olam, says the Gemara, ubnei adam mezalzel. So said Rav Soloveitchik, people want to be able at the end of the day to check the boxes. You know, shachris check, mincha check, marav check. Rav Soloveitchik said, people don't want to daven, they want to have davened. You hear the difference? We don't necessarily enjoy davening so much. We don't want to daven. I want to make sure that at the end of the day I could say, I lashon avar, I have davened. I know that I got it done today. I was able to check off the box. But that's very different than a person who wants to daven, who enjoys davening. And chevra, we've all had moments in our life where we had a good davening. There's a couple, I can think of a couple Shmona Esther specifically in my life. I can remember exactly where I was, exactly how I felt. I can close my eyes and I can transport myself to that place right now. But ruba de ruba, most of my minchas of my life, I can't picture them. It's not in some supernal realm that's etched into time, but in terms of my own experience, my own emotional connection to it, it's not so much there, because I wasn't so much there. Rav Chatzkel Levinstein, the great Mashkiach, said, he said that when I finished davening, and again, it's a madriga, but Rav Chatzkel said that when I finished davening, at the end of davening, I look forward to the next opportunity to daven, like a person looks forward to the next meal, the person who really enjoys eating. Let's use the mushel of a person. Let's say on your birthday, there's a certain restaurant you go out to, an expensive restaurant you go out to once a year on your birthday. You can't go there all the time. You can't afford it. It wouldn't be special if you went all the time. Right? Or your anniversary. You know, a husband and wife, they go out to a certain restaurant on their anniversary to celebrate their anniversary. Yeah? And it's such a good time. It's such a good meal that, you know, when the meal's over, they say, I can't wait till next year when we get to do this again. Rav Chatzkel Levinstein said, when I finish davening Shmona Esther, I can't wait, you know? I finish, so to speak, my breakfast, my shachris, I can't wait for lunch. I'm hungry for that next Shmona Esther. How many people live like that? And the answer is not too many. But the avoda is, and the avoda of tefillah is that tefillah actually can be something that we look forward to. Not a chore, not a box to check off, but a way to connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu where I say, Hashem, I'm so excited to be here with you. to be able to talk to you and to have you talk back to me. Rabbi Shimon Schwab, who was a Rav in the Breuer's community in Washington Heights for many, many years. Before that, he was a Rav in Baltimore for many years. And Rabbi Schwab told the story, it rips my heart out every time I share it, but it's an important story. Rabbi Schwab said he was walking one Sunday afternoon. He was walking in the streets of Baltimore, and all of a sudden he was walking past the church, and he saw the wife of the president of his shul coming out of church on a Sunday morning. Well, Orthodox people, as far as he knew, the president of his shul, his wife, was walking out of the church on a Sunday. Rav Schwab didn't want to embarrass her. He was embarrassed for her. He was embarrassed for himself. He quickly turned around and walked the other way, but it was weighing on him. What was she doing in a church? The president of my kehila, my shul, so strange. So he decided I have to have a conversation with her. So Rav Schwab invited this woman to his home. And he asked her, how are things? You know, how are things? With you, your husband, your family life, how's everything going? Good, good, Rabbi, thank you very much, everything's good. So he said, I have to, Mrs. So-and-so, I have to just, I feel so awkward saying this, but I saw you coming out of a church on Sunday a couple of weeks ago. So she says, no, Rabbi, don't worry, don't worry, I'm an, Rabbi, you know me and my husband, we're Orthodox. He said, that's what I thought, I can't. She says, no, you don't understand, but Rabbi, there's this one thing that they have that I just, you know, like, it's very attractive to me. So he said, what is it? What do they have that you're so drawn to? So he said, they have this thing, it's called confession. You sit in this little booth, you know, you like knock on the window, the priest opens the door, and you pour out your heart to the priest, you tell them everything you did, you talk about your ups and your downs, right? And it's an unbelievable experience to be able to confess in that way. So Schwab says, we also have confession, you know? Maybe we don't think of it that way, but every time we say tachnun, that's confession. You know, we also have vidui. Those who are a little more breastless. We have this boat of this. You could go out and talk to Hashem. What do you mean? Like, what do you mean confession? You're able to talk it out. Of course you could do the same thing. What do you mean? You think they made that up? You don't think we have confession? We don't have vidui. So she said to him, and she said it with all seriousness, and it's crazy that she said it, but she said to him, she says, no, Rabbi, you don't understand. In the confession booth, there's someone on the other side who actually answers you. Like, I'm actually talking to someone. Like, I'm not davening to the air. Like, it's very meaningful when someone talks back. When I know there's someone on the other side. And he's thinking to himself, like, wow. Like, what has become of tefillah that we don't think we're talking to anyone when we're davening? And we don't think that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was interested in listening or even responding to us. But a little bit, as painful as that story is, a little bit we all get that story, we understand that story, because that's also our experience. The frustration of tefillah is that it doesn't feel like a dialogue, it doesn't feel like a conversation with Hashem. More often than not, it feels like a monologue. I'm just saying things, I don't know how I'm doing, I don't know if Hashem is responding. Sometimes things that I ask for seem to work out. Does that mean my tefillah is being answered? Hashem, are you out there? Are you listening? It would be great if I could hear a bas kol. You know, and Hashem called back, yes, I'm listening. Hashem, give me a sign. Talk to me. Say something. And we become very, very frustrated because we have this perception that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not listening. All the more so when our tefillahs don't work out the way that we like them to work out. We think tefillah, as one of my Rebbeim likes to call it, we think of HaKadosh Baruch Hu as like an ATM machine in the sky, you know? Like we show up, we ask for a couple things, we withdraw whatever it is that we need, and then we say thank you so much, we'll see you around. That's not what tefillah is. What does the word tefillah mean? Tefillah, tefillin, naftali, it's all the same shoresh. It means connection. It means attachment. It's about an opportunity to connect to a Kadosh Baruch Hu. And we'll talk a little later. The truth is, if you learn how to listen, maybe you can hear a Kadosh Baruch Hu talking back to you. But tefillah is not only about getting what you want. It's an opportunity to talk to Hashem, to believe and to know that Hashem is listening. And you don't always get what you want. It doesn't always go exactly the way that we want it to go. I'll share with you a very powerful, but also painful, experience that happened to Klal Yisrael in 1994. It's well known, and it was very tragic. Sunday, October 9th, 1994, an IDF soldier by the name of Nachshon Waxman was making his way home to Yerushalayim on a Motzei Shabbos. And he got into a car, which he thought were a bunch of Hasidim, with Hasidic music playing. The Tanakh on the dashboard. Turned out, of course, Rachmana Litzlan was Hamas militants, Yimach Shemam, who kidnapped Nachshon Waxman, and the whole world was turned over in those next couple of days. There was an ultimatum Friday night, 8 p.m. They made their demands. If not, they're going to kill Nachshon. And the Jewish people responded in the way that only Klal Yisrael can. Mika Am Klal Yisrael. Listen to how his mother described those days. We appealed to world leaders everywhere and to Muslim religious leaders, all whom stated unequivocally on the media that they must not harm our son. And we appealed to our brethren, to the Jewish people throughout the world, and asked them to pray for our son. The chief rabbi of Israel delegated three chapters of Tehillim to be said every day, and people everywhere, including school children who had never davened before, did so for the sake of one precious Jewish soul. Jews around the world were trying to rally, to daven. They were davening and davening Tehillim. I asked women throughout the world to light an extra Shabbos candle for my son. From about 30,000 letters that poured into our home, I learned of thousands of women who had never lit Shabbos candles before, who just wanted to do something, to petition, Rachmei Shemayim, Hashem, have Rachmanis on Nachshon Waxman. Unbelievable, who did so for the sake of our son, who had become a symbol of everyone's son, brother, and friend. On Thursday night, 24 hours before the ultimatum, a prayer vigil was held at the Kotel. And at the same hour, tefillos were held throughout the world in shuls and schools and community centers, street squares, and yes, even churches throughout the world. People of good faith everywhere hoped and pleaded and prayed for Nachshon. At the Kotel, 100,000 people arrived with almost no notice. Chassidim in black frock coats and long side curls swayed and prayed and cried side by side with young boys in torn jeans and ponytails and earrings. There was total unity and solidarity of purpose among us, religious and secular, left-wing and right-wing, Sephardi, Ashkenazi, old and young, rich and poor. Everyone came out for Nachshon Waxman. And his mother's describing what that meant to her, an occurrence unprecedented in our sadly fragmented society. You can't have better tefillah than that. You can't have better unity. You can't have petitioning Rabbono Shel Olam. The whole world united. Jews and even some non-Jews alike. And of course, the end of the story was a tragedy. A mission to try to save Nachshon. It went awry, and he lost his life. And you can imagine the feeling, the bitter feeling, that terrible taste, in addition to the tragedy, what was with all the tefillos? What did we accomplish? I mean, again, a beautiful thing. All these women lit Shabbos candles, and all these school children said Tehillim, and tens of thousands of people gathered in Yerushalayim at the Kotel. For what? Nachshon's father, Nachshon's own father, told Nachshon's Rosh Yeshiva that when he speaks at the Levaya, I want you to tell Klal Yisrael that our tefillos were not ignored. Make sure Klal Yisrael knows that we can't walk away from such an experience and say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu wasn't listening, God forbid. And he said, very famously, he said, HaKadosh Baruch Hu did listen to every single one of our tefillos, and Hashem, in his infinite knowledge, said no. That doesn't mean God's not listening. Sometimes HaKadosh Baruch Hu says no. There's a lot of things that HaKadosh Baruch Hu does in the world that we don't understand. There's a million and one questions. Rav Levi Yitzchak of Berditchev used to say by the Seder, when it came time to ask, you know, the four questions of the Seder, right? The Manish Tanai, Rav Levi Yitzchak of Berditchev used to say, Rabbono Sholem, you think I have four questions? I have 4,000 questions. There's so many things you do I don't understand. Whenever I tell that story, I always say, Rabbono Sholem, after the Holocaust, I have 6 million questions on you, Rabbono Sholem. I have 6 million questions on you. We don't know how Hashem runs the world. But God forbid to think, what's the point of picking up a sitter if HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not listening? Hashem's always listening. Sometimes HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in a way that only HaKadosh Baruch Hu understands, has to say no to Klal Yisrael. And sometimes, after all of those tefillos, right, we actually do eventually get to see what happened to all those unanswered tefillos. Because the unanswered tefillos have to just be redirected. They're not in vain. They're not wasted. Hashem doesn't crumple them up and throw them in the garbage. Rachman al-Itzlan. If you say, I need this, and Hashem says, I can't give you that, but the tefillah, I'm going to reposition it. I'm going to use it for something else. Do you know that when Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach, one of the great Gedolei Dor, when Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach was sick also, there was such an outpouring of tefillah. Everyone knew the name Shlomo Zalman ben Rivka. Everyone, every Jew in the world was davening. Tehillim, tefillos. And Rav Shlomo Zalman passed away. After Klal Yisrael begged and begged and begged, we need a Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach in the world. Klal Yisrael can't survive without such a tzaddik, such a Rosh Yeshiva, such a Talmud Chacham, such a Gadol Hador. Where are we going to go without him? And Klal Yisrael davened, and there were whispers. People were saying after us, what happened, you know? Such an outpouring of tefillah. So, Chaim, should I tell you what happened? I can't speak on behalf of Hashem. I can only tell you what I read years later from a woman who shared an unbelievable thing. A woman from Borough Park shared that her brother was in a car accident in Borough Park. And he was lying in a hospital, Kings County Hospital, fighting for his life. And she said, Klal Yisrael didn't know at the time, but it was the same time that Shlomo Zalman Orbach was also towards the end of his life. And people were davening, Shlomo Zalman ben Rivka for Refuah Shlema, Shlomo Zalman ben Rivka for Refuah Shlema. This woman later wrote, she said, my brother's name was Shlomo Zalman ben Rivka. My brother was in that car accident, the doctor said he's not going to make it. And everyone gave up hope. So Klal Yisrael is davening for Shlomo Zalman ben Rivka, Harav Shlomo Zalman Orbach, Zecher Tzadik Kadosh Livracha, and a much lesser known Shlomo Zalman ben Rivka is being given all of those tefillos somewhere far, far away from Eretz Yisrael. No, do we know how Kadosh Baruch Hu runs the world? Our job is to keep davening. Our job is to believe that Kadosh Baruch Hu is listening to our tefillos. Our job is to realize there's no such thing as a tefillah that's ignored. Sometimes Kadosh Baruch Hu says no, like Nachshon Waxman's father said, in the heights of his pain, at a time of unbelievable tefillah. Sometimes Hashem says no. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu is always listening, and therefore it's always worthwhile to pick up our siddur. Anyone here learning Maseches Brachos? Anyone here ever learned Maseches Brachos? Where do we know tefillah from? Where's the source of tefillah? Shacharis, Mincha, Maariv, where do we get it from? The Gemara says we either get it from Avos or Karbanos. Okay? Avos. Avram was Tikein Shacharis. Yitzchak established Mincha. And Yaakov is Maariv. Okay. What's the source for Shacharis? What's the pasuk that the Gemara brings? It's in this week's Parsha. The pasuk says, "Vayashkim Avram baboker elamakom asher amad sham." Did you ever think? Did you ever actually look that pasuk up and think about it for half a second? The source for davening Shacharis is "Vayashkim Avram baboker." This week's Parsha, Perek Yud Tes. I think it's pasuk of Zion. Avram gets up early in the morning, and he goes to the place that he had previously stood. Where was Avram standing at that moment? What's the context of those psukim? He's overlooking what? The Chorban of Sodom Vamor. He's looking at a world that was completely overturned. Avram Avin, who's begging Hashem, petitioning. Maybe there's 50 tzaddikim. 40, 30, 20, 10. Maybe something. Hashem, come on. Can we negotiate? Avram's begging. He's trying to somehow stop this gezeira. And then Avram gets up the next day and he goes to that spot. And he's looking over his failed tefillah, mamish, totally overturned, fire and brimstone, completely destroyed. And Vayashkim Avram baboker. Oh, it says boker in the pasuk. That's Shacharis. Right? It says he was amad, he stood, ein amida el tefillah. Oh, gavaldik, that's the source for davening Shacharis. Said the Belzer Rebbe, that's the source for davening Shacharis? Avram standing, looking at his failed tefillahs? But the Belzer Rebbe is telling us that the foundation of tefillah is the recognition and the realization that, you know what? There's no such thing as a failed tefillah. Avram Avinu understood that even though the thing that he asked for didn't happen the way that he asked for it, but he believed that his tefillah was answered. Or even if you want to say differently, that he believed his tefillah was rejected, he said, Afal Pichet, I'm going to keep davening. He went back to the same spot where he spoke to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And he looked at his failed tefillah in front of him and he said, okay, you know what? That tefillah didn't work out. But maybe I need to try just a little bit more. Maybe next time I have to daven a little bit harder. Maybe I have to believe that there's no such thing as a tefillah in vain. Moshe Rabbeinu wanted nothing other than to have the schus that all of you have right now to be in Eretz Yisrael. How many tefillahs did Moshe Rabbeinu daven? Chazal say 515 tefillahs. The Vilna Gaon explains that it means he davened not just 515 Shmona Esrei, 550 totally different tefillos. Moshe Rabbeinu went to every Sfarim store he could find and bought every type of siddur, Nusach Ashkenaz, Nusach Sfar, Nusach Ari, Eidot HaMizrach. He bought every siddur with every kavana, every perish in tefillah. Moshe davened 550 totally different tefillos, begging Hashem to go into Eretz Yisrael. Ve'eschanan el Hashem ba'esahi lemor. As Chazal already say, the gematria of the word Ve'eschanan is 515, which is then gematria is the word tefillah. Tav pei lamed hey, 515. Moshe davened the greatest tefillos possible.
And HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, you're not going into Eretz Yisrael. Chazal revealed to us, had Moshe pushed Hashem one more time, his tefillahs would have been answered. But Hashem told him not to, and Moshe respectfully listened. So, chaver, what happened to those 515 tefillahs? They're just lost in time? Moshe wasted his breath trying to talk to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? I once heard an explanation from one of the great Gedolim in Eretz Yisrael today, Rav Asher Weiss Shlita. Rav Asher said an unbelievable explanation. He said, I'll tell you exactly what happened to those tefillahs. How long is the world supposed to last, according to Jewish tradition? Anyone know? 6,000 years. The Gemara says in two places, in Avodah Zarah and Sanhedrin, 6,000 years is the span of the world. Okay, we're getting close. Getting close to the end here. There's a medrash called Medrash Osios Derbi Akiva, where it says 6,093 years. Okay, a lesser known source, 6,093. So said Rav Asher Weiss, what year was Moshe davening? What year did the Jewish people leave Mitzrayim? What year did we get the Torah? 2448 from creation. This is at the end of 40 years. Moshe wants to continue on. The end of 40 years in the Midbar. It's the year 2488. So chaver, let's do a little math. If the world is supposed to last for 6,093 years, and Moshe davened his tefillos in the year 2488, how many years are left from the time Moshe davened until the end of time? Who's got the magic number? Who's got it? 6093 minus 2488. 3,605. So Rav Asher Weiss explained, Rav Asher Weiss said, in 3,605 years, there are exactly 515 Shemitah cycles. 515 times 7. Which means Moshe Rabbeinu, for every cycle, so to speak, of the Jewish calendar, right, for every cycle of time, arranged according to the seven-year cycle of Shemitah, which permeates Jewish life and Jewish law, Moshe Rabbeinu, each one of those tefillos, Hashem said, I'm going to put it aside for that, for those 7 years, for that period of time. From the time you daven until the end of time, till the last possible moment for Mashiach's arrival. Said Rav Asher Weiss, don't God forbid think for a second, Moshe Rabbeinu's tefillos weren't answered. They were answered. They were purposeful. And that's why, chaver, that's why it's always worth picking up a sitter. You'll say, nah, it's hopeless. The situation's hopeless. There's nothing I can do to help in this situation. First of all, you never know. You never know who you're helping in that situation. You're davening for Shlomo Zalman ben Rivka, and a different Shlomo Zalman ben Rivka as a Rafua Shlomo. You don't know. We don't know how Kodesh Baruch Hu runs the world. But our job is to pick up our Siddur, Kaveh El Hashem, to put our hope in Hashem, and if it doesn't work out, or it seems to not work out, Chazak V'yametz Libecha, V'Kaveh El Hashem, to put our hope in Hashem again. And to daven again, and to daven again, and to daven again, and to say, you know what, maybe that next tefillah will be the breakthrough. Because sometimes when a person davens and davens and davens, you do see that breakthrough. And even if you don't get exactly what you want, your relationship with Hashem has been transformed. And you know that if it didn't work out for you, it's working out for someone else. And therefore, it's worth it. It's worth it to daven that too. I once heard a story from Rabbi Jonathan Sacks, Rabbi Lord Jonathan Sacks, former chief rabbi. He said a great story. He said that he was appointed chief rabbi of England at the same time that Dr. George Carey was appointed the Archbishop of Canterbury. Okay. Now, it happens to be that both of them are soccer fans or football fans, and they both root for the team Arsenal Football Club. So, at the time that they were both given this new position of chashivas, right, Chief Rabbi and the Archbishop, Lahavdil of Canterbury, so the two of them, known as sports fans, Arsenal fans, They were invited to a soccer game in celebration of their newly appointed positions. And it was a beautiful thing. They came down onto the field before the game, and they were introduced to the crowd, the cheering crowd. And they had one of those big checks to give to charity, to help whatever, children who have whatever illness. And it was a whole beautiful thing, a beautiful display. And everyone said that night, they said, oh, this is, whichever religion you practice, this is a night where for sure Arsenal's going to win big. Highbury Stadium, they had a special booth, hush of seats. That night, Arsenal Football Club lost in their worst home loss in 63 years They lost to their arch rival Manchester United 6-2. And someone wrote in the papers the next day, if the Archbishop of Canterbury and the Chief Rabbi, I would have said it the other way, but that's how the person wrote it. Obviously, Lahavta. But if the Archbishop and the Chief Rabbi, if they can't get a win for Arsenal on such a night with their prayers, with them in attendance in the audience, right, then this is a clear proof that God does not exist. So the Chief Rabbi wrote back. Rabbi Sachs wrote back. It's Kavaldik. Rabbi Sachs wrote back. He said, Lehefech. He said, it's absolutely a proof that HaKadosh Baruch Hu does exist, that God does exist. It just happens to be that God is a Manchester United fan. That's all it proves. It doesn't prove anything about HaKadosh Baruch Hu's existence. Well, sometimes we have our own cheshbonos. We think we know how HaKadosh Baruch Hu runs the world. Our job is to just be daveners, people who learn how to daven. Like David HaMelech said, Va'ani tefila. I'm not just someone who does daven, I'm not someone who has daven, like Rav Soloveitchik said. I want to be a davener. I want to be someone who can be defined by his tefillah. Va'ani tefillah. David HaMelech says, I am tefillah. I want to be tefillah. And chevra, it's possible over the course of a lifetime, you know what, to even train your ear to hear in some way HaKadosh Baruch Hu talking back to us. Avram Avinu gets the call, last week's parsha, Lech lecha me'artzecha el ha'aretz ha'sharecha. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Avram, I'm offering you the opportunity to come to Eretz Yisrael, to leave your home, to become my chosen one. Sfasema says an unbelievable thing. Sfasema says, Avram Avinu was not the only one who was given the opportunity to hear HaKadosh Baruch Hu in that moment. Sfasema says, I think it might be based on a Zohar, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu spoke to the whole world. Anyone who wants to listen, Lech lecha me'artzecha. But only Avram Avinu was tuned into the channel to actually hear HaKadosh Baruch Hu. If you're listening for HaKadosh Baruch Hu in your life, you may not hear a baskol. You may not hear the Dvar Hashem. You may not get a nevuah. You may not hear Hashem the way we heard it at Har Sinai. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu talks to us. The Baal Shem Tov said, everything a person sees, everything a person hears, everything a person experiences, is HaKadosh Baruch Hu communicating with us. Sometimes Hashem responds to our tefillos in a roundabout way. Rabbi Shlomo Freifeld, the founder of Shor Yashiv. If you haven't read his biography, you want a good book to read, I highly recommend it. I highly, highly recommend it. And people ask me, Moshe Tzvi, what's a good sefer to read? I say, start with the Chumash. You should probably know what it says in there. And after that, the biography of Shlomo Freifeld. That's what I tell people. The Emes, that's what I tell people. It's that good. He was a genius of spirit. Rabbi Shlomo Freifeld, one time, got a call from the bank. And the bank, the person on the phone said, Rabbi, we need you to come into the bank. There's some concern with the yeshiva's account. Okay? So Rabbi Freifeld and one of his talmidim, they went to the bank. He walks into the bank, and he walks over to one of the desks up front. And there's a woman who's standing there. And he introduces himself. He says, hi, my name is Shlomo Freifeld. Oh, Rabbi Freifeld, so nice to finally meet you. She had spoken to him many times on the phone before. She never met Rav Freifeld in person. Now, Rav Freifeld was a towering person, very tall person. Very very noble-looking person. Carried himself like, you know, a real Rosh Hashiva. You know, a very humble person. But he had a real hadras panim, Rav Freifeld. So she blurted out, it was a strange thing to say. She says to Rav Freifeld, oh, Rav Freifeld, she said, I spoke to him on the phone many times. I never pictured you to be such a big person. A weird thing to say, but that's what she said. You know, Rashi Yeshivas usually come in two types. You have like the really tall, you know, towering Rashi Yeshivas, and then you have the short, cute Rashi Yeshivas. So I guess she thought he was more of like the short, cute Rashi Yeshiva type. Rav Freifeld was the tall, you know, the tall, long coat Rashi Yeshiva type. Okay. So she says, Rabbi, the truth is the manager of the bank who's on the second floor would like to speak with you. Okay? There's a concern with the yeshiva account. So he goes upstairs and he sits down. Rav Freifeld and his Talmud in the yeshiva. And the manager says, you know, Rabbi, we've been we're preparing the yeshiva's payroll and we're going over some of the account and there's some concerns with the account. It looks like you're going to be a little bit short this month. It looks like the account is a little bit short. So Rav Freifeld turns to his Talmud and he says, did you hear what he just said? So he said, yeah, Rabbi, I guess we'll have to do some fundraising, you know. I want to make sure the Rebbeim get paid on time. He says, no, but did you hear what just happened? We need some money for the yeshiva. No, Rav Freifeld said, no, listen. He said, downstairs they told me, the lady downstairs told me that I'm a big man. But when I got upstairs, they told me that my account is a little bit short. You hear?
person walks around in this world, you think you're a big shot. You think you're a big knocker, you know? You think you're doing a great job. And then you get to the Olam HaEmes, you get upstairs and they say, Moshe Tzvi, you could have done a little more. Could have been a little more sensitive. Could have taught your Torah a little better. You could have davened a little more kavanah. You could have given more tzedakah. You could have got up a little earlier in the morning. Sometimes in this world, you think you're a big person. And you get upstairs and you're a little short. Only an ear that's attuned to hear the Dvar Hashem like Rav Feivel could hear such a thing. And chavra, that's the challenge to us when we daven. A, again, to believe that every tefillah counts and it matters. Hashem is listening, even when Hashem says no. B, to realize that sometimes the Kodesh Baruch Hu is answering us in a roundabout way. And Hashem is actually not saying no, He's just redirecting our tefillah in a slightly different way. To realize that even if, God forbid, a Kodesh Baruch Hu were to say, I'm not interested in that tefillah, afal pichein, a Jew tries again, chazik v'amitz libecho, v'kavei el Hashem, we continue to push. And to try to listen carefully, like the Avram Avinus of the world, who heard Lech Lecha because they were listening. Or like the Rav Shlomo Freifels of the world, who were able to hear a message being spoken by two human beings who didn't even realize what they were saying to him. Moshe Rabbeinu is sitting in the Ohel Moed, in the Mishkan. Vayikra Hashem al Moshe, the beginning of Sefer Vayikra. Vayikra al Moshe, Hashem calls to Moshe, Vayadaber Hashem elav, Vayadaber elokim elav. May Ohel Moed, Rashi says, the voice of Hashem was heard only in the Ohel Moed. Take a look at the Sefer Darchei Musar. Rav Yaakov Naiman explains. The voice of Hashem was only heard in the Ohel Moed by Moshe because Moshe was the only one who was listening. Hashem's voice is loud. It should have been heard by a lot of other people. But if you're not tuned into the right channel, says the Darchei Musar, Vayikra al Moshe, only Moshe is the one who's going to get the call, the only one who's able to hear. So, Chavra, I want to just end before you daven mincha now. Like our Olshan said so beautifully at the beginning, turn the Torah into tefillah. Daven for something real. Know that it 100% is going to make a difference in the world. How, when, where, what? I don't know. I don't know exactly. But at the very least, you're doing what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants. You're communicating with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, tefillah. You're attaching yourself to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I want to end with a beautiful little thing that I saw in the newspaper one time. An amazing little story. Listen to this. And I'll end with this. If I can find it. There's a little article in the newspaper. Letter written in Maine 83 years ago, finally delivered. Listen to this. A letter written by a Maine school teacher in 1931 to her mother, 150 miles away, has finally been delivered 83 years later. Know what happened to the letter for 83 years. Listen to this. 23-year-old Miriam McMichael sent the 9-page letter from Holton to Delana McMichael in Pittsfield. Both women have since died. The letter was lost and only recently found at the Pittsfield post office. Postal worker Michelle Rowell found it. I guess it had fallen like behind the desk or something. And after, you know, decades, they finally decided to redo the post office. They found this letter behind the cabinet or whatever it was. Postal worker Michelle Rowell found the letter and tells the Morning Sentinel she knew it was old because of the 2-cent stamp. The postmaster and town officials tracked down the family, and the letter is now in the hands of 69-year-old Anne McMichael of Cornville, Miriam's niece and Delana's granddaughter. McMichael says the irony is that the writer apologized in the letter for not writing sooner. Yuchavah, we daven to Hashem. When our tefillos will be answered? How many times in our life, in your life, 18 years old, 19 years old, I'm 38 years old, how many times have we asked Hashem for Mashiach? Hashem, when are you going to deliver already? We've been asking for years and years and years, 1900 plus years since we had a Beis Hamikdash. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu keeps the score. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has a master plan. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to redirect our tefillos, and Hashem knows exactly how and when and what our tefillos are going to be answered. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu should help us in a land of connection, Eretz Yisrael, a place of connectivity. Become a person who's not just looking to check off the box. Learn what it means to daven. Work on this avodah shebelev. This pillar upon which the world stands, that far too many people don't take seriously, as Chazal already recognized. But become a person who's really a davener, a person who believes that your tefillos matter. And Emir Tz Hashem, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, should answer each and every one of our tefillos l'tov.